getting a divorce, even thinking about getting a divorce, can be overwhelming, scary, and sometimes exciting. Join divorce coach and mediator Mandy Walker for conversations about divorce. The more you know, the easier it will be to make your divorce healthier, less stressful, and to put it behind you. Here's Mandy.
Welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker, and today we're talking about why people stay in unhealthy marriages. As a divorce coach and blogger, I hear lots of stories about people's marriages. They write and share the awful things that have been going on, oftentimes for years, and then they say they really feel like throwing in the towel and calling it quits, but should they do that? They feel guilty, they're scared, they're embarrassed, they're ashamed, they're concerned for their kids, they don't think they can afford to leave. And sometimes they wonder if their reason for wanting to leave is good enough. Well, I could go on, and I know I haven't covered all of the reasons, but the result is often that people stay locked in unhealthy relationships, paralyzed, in limbo, not able to make a decision. And typically, they're struggling on their own. They're fearful of opening up to family and friends. My guest today is someone who can identify with that struggle. My guest is Alex Dillon, who was married for 47 difficult years before she said that she was leaving. She's the author of Leaving You for Me, and she's here to help us understand these struggles. Welcome, Alex.
Well, thank you. Hello, Mandy. And I'm glad you included me on this program today.
Well, it's great to have you. Let me start by asking you, Alex, how would you describe your marriage? Was it troubled from the very beginning?
Well, I didn't realize it, but yes, the dynamics came, you know, as the book goes along, I realized that, you know, he had been having extramarital affairs almost from the beginning, and I didn't know. You know, I knew that I was insecure. I knew that I always used to worry if he would leave when I got older. But I didn't know, you know. I didn't know until I actually left the relationship. And then there's a lot of things that come out. And then people, you know, of course, go, I didn't want to tell you before. But
right.
I also found out that my doctor had treated me for an STD and didn't tell me that's what it was. I didn't
know.
Oh,
my gosh. Really?
Yeah. Gave me, finally said, you know, has your husband ever been treated? And this is after I had struggled with these vaginal infections for years. They had caused other conditions and problems that I had to deal with from some of the medications they'd given me that were for, they said, bacterial and yeast infections. And finally, this one doctor tested me for STDs, and guess what? And then he said, here, you know, let's treat your husband this time. But he never told me that's what it was. And that was like 10 years into my marriage, and I didn't know. And
so these affairs, you didn't find out about them until after you had left, or you realized that he'd been unfaithful 10 years into your marriage, but the marriage still continued?
Oh, the marriage still continued. He didn't want anybody else to keep. I gave him the image of the husband and the father and the lifestyle, and he wanted that. But he played around on the side, and the repeat thing was always, it didn't mean anything. I just had fun with it.
And
you're
so,
the one I want, and yeah.
And what did it mean for you, though, from your perspective? How did you cope with those? Or, you know, what made you stay in the marriage knowing that he had been unfaithful?
There are a lot of things. One, you have a lot to lose. You have the guilt of leaving. You've got the kids. You've got the family. You've got everybody who has tough relationships that you know. It's not, I was raised in the boys will be boys generation. And my dad did this to my mother. And, you know, you put your family back together and you work, and every time you think this time it's going to be different. And now you know a little bit more about it, or there were only a few times that I knew for sure, and it was 30 years ago, and I left. He left. The kids were still young and at home, and I was comfortable with him being gone, and then he went into the totally fell apart. I can't concentrate. I need you. I had no idea. I'm so sorry. I have all these regrets. If you'll let me come home, I'll be the husband and the father I never was, and I still said no. And then one morning at 4 o'clock, my dad had a heart attack. My ex met me at the hospital. He stayed at home with the kids while I went and slept on my dad's side of the bed with my mother. And I went home, and he never left. And I don't know why. That was part of the what drove me when I wrote the book, was researching why. Why did I stay all
why did you
those
stay?
Years?
Yeah.
And, you know, you'd never, it's denial. You never, after that, I never really knew for sure. Because then I became this suspicious, bitter, whatever person. If I was going to, you know, what was I going to do? Hire a private detective? You know, you can't question them because then you get the rage and you learn to shut down. And so you think, okay, probably not happening. You know, lighten up. You have a great life. You got a great family. Pull yourself together. You take the blame. You take the responsibility.
So you kind of rationalize what's happening and maybe choose your battles, and you try and do a weigh things up and like, well, on the whole, my life is pretty good and I should just suck this up.
You do. And then as far as being happy, I was, you know, I worked in the family business. It's just you never... The only time you get reinforcement from them about, of course I care about you, of course, you know, what's wrong with you that you don't see that? It's always what's wrong with you, and of course they do, and then you think, well, yeah, you know, he does come home every night. My dad said, what are you doing? You know, when I, and this was right before my dad died. He got very angry because I didn't want my husband back in the house. He had had an affair with my best friend. He had told me he didn't know what he wanted, didn't know if he wanted to be married anymore. And we finally he left, and I didn't want him to come back. And my dad said, you know, what's wrong with you? He comes home every night and he doesn't beat you. And so you get family and friends that you're going to disappoint everybody. They think you're nuts.
Right.
They don't see this side of this successful. My husband was brilliant, dynamic, successful. He's a great guy to everybody.
So that's the outside image that everybody sees.
And... Everybody sees, and we cover it up. Yeah, we go along and, you know, we're the accessory on their arm, and we smile and we make great dinners and dinner parties and try to be enough to get their approval. And then a very real thing that happens, Mandy, and it's called trauma bonding, and it is not Stockholm syndrome. It isn't where you fear for your life and bond to a kidnapper. It is the result of it's an attachment disorder that is formed from emotional abuse. And it is absolutely, it's a response to emotional trauma, to betrayal, neglect, bullying, devaluing, lies, silent treatments. It becomes a cycle when it happens time and over again, and it's sprinkled in with the, of course I want you, of course I love you. And then you go, I don't have to face all of those fears I had about leaving again, so I'm just going to try harder. And so you stay, and it becomes a cycle. And then when you get that, you know, when they give you that reinforcement, it is very real that your body does the oxytocin, the dopamine, the serotonin, and you actually become hooked. And that was one of the things that defies logic, because you know better. Why do I miss this?
So in your book, you describe your life as having it all from the outside, and this talks, and every I tell so many people, what you see from the outside is never what's going on the inside. So don't go thinking that so and so has a better marriage than you or a better relationship. But in terms of you thinking that you did have it all, was that a factor in staying married, not wanting to give that up? How much of it did you give up?
Oh, in the end, you know what I can tell you? In the end, I got half. It was a family business. I didn't give up. I gave up half, but it wasn't. I didn't have the insecurity this time of the financial. But 30 years ago, when I didn't want him to come back, it wasn't like that. The business was still new. I was going to end up going back to work, and I wasn't afraid of that anymore. Once I got out, I was okay with that. The stuff is not why I stayed. The stuff is why he didn't want me to leave.
Okay, so you're saying why you stayed though was all the pressure from your family and from friends,
You know,
fear about for your children.
A developing dynamic. I had the critical older sister, 6 years older. She'd been the little princess, and here I came. And my dad had more time, and she said he spoiled me, and she didn't like me. And so it was, you get out of here, you're a pain in the ass, and yada, yada. And I wanted, I mean, she was my older sister, and I wanted her approval, and I normalized to that kind of rejection. And you become a peacekeeper, and you start to bargain. Is it worth, do I want this bad enough to challenge it and get her angry and this kind of thing? And then I completely idealized my mother, and I measured myself by her, and I never measured up. And so I normalized to not being enough. And then I get into this relationship with a man who has a very abusive background. And, I look back, and right out of the gate, he doesn't come home from work. He doesn't call. It's 10 o'clock at night when he gets there, and I'm upset, and I said, I'm not going to do this. And he yells and bullies, and my parents did this, and I'm not going to do this. I'm married, and we're going to get divorced if you're going to argue with me about this shit. I was out with the guys. I'm not pussy whipped, and blah, blah, blah. And I made a decision that night that it wasn't enough I was going to divorce over. And so it becomes like that, step by step by step. You start to back down, and you fall into those patterns. And it becomes, that's how the dynamics of those relationships work, how somebody beyond logic allows themselves to be bullied. And I'm not a stupid person. If I had somebody sat down and said, your husband's doing this, 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 and this, I'd have said, what are you doing? You're out of your mind. But you got, what happens is we get caught up in those dynamics, and this happens over and over and over to
Right.
people. And once they realize what's happening, then the bullying kicks in. It does, even after I had left him. And I had been out of the relationship for a year, and we're in divorce negotiations, and he starts blowing up and yelling at me. I did the same thing. I back down, because in that kind of a rage, if you push and challenge him, you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And so that becomes the pattern. I just bite my lip, and it makes me mad that I do that. I want to stand up. I still never told that man off. And
Well, so
there's
how
no
much of that,
point.
though, is self-preservation?
A lot of it is. You're absolutely right. It's survival instincts, and I think it probably goes back to the biology of what we do to protect our kids, to, the whole stability of the family that we think of ourselves as a key player is the mom, and to take care of the family and of the kids, and to survive and do that, these dynamics kick in. Yes, yeah.
Right.
There's a lot that happens in the back brain behind the logic, from the chemical addiction that is very real, to the dynamics that we develop because survival instincts incite us to do so.
Was your husband ever physically abusive to you?
No. No, he never was. And see, this is another thing. He never hit me. If he was really bad, you know, he would have hit me because I had friends who that happened to.
Right. And but, so that's part of the rationalization. And like you said, your father said, well, what are you doing? Because he doesn't beat
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
exactly.
like, that's kind of like the bar or the standard that people hold up and say that if you're not getting beaten, then everything should be good.
Well, yeah, and you know, what is it you want? You've got all these other things, and so he looks at you, and you know, what do you want from me? You know, you're completely ungrateful. I give you everything. I work hard all the time. Can't you just, I need some space. You need to back off. You need to stop being insecure. I have other friends. I need them. You need professional counseling because you don't understand my friendships because you're screwed up. And so, you know, it goes like this until it reached a point.
Well, we're going to get to your, I'm going to ask you about your final straw in a moment. But first, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker. And today we're talking about why people stay in unhealthy marriages. My guest is Alex Dillon. Alex is the author of Leaving You for Me. It's the story of how Alex found the courage to leave her husband of 47 years and venture into singledom in her 60s. Alex, in your book, you use the phrase holding myself together with barbed wire. That conjures up quite a visual image to me. I wondered if you could share with our listeners what that phrase means to you.
That phrase came to me one night at 3 o'clock in the morning. I sat bolt upright in the bed, and I had just found out he was having an affair that he had told me he was going to stop, that it was over, and he had lied, and it happened again, and I realized that I was holding myself together with barbed wire. I was afraid to move. Anything I did hurt, and I was in trouble, and I needed to do something.
So the barbed wire was just that you almost like you were paralyzed with fear that you couldn't move forward because it would hurt. You would something bad would happen to you.
I was paralyzed with the insanity of it all. You know, when you find out for sure what's going on, the betrayal and the lies, you have to accept a lot of things all at one time. And also have the courage to stand up and say, I'm not going to do this anymore. And it's a scary place to be. I felt like if I didn't stay cinched in that barbed wire, I was going to fall apart.
Hmm. So was the discovery of this latest affair that you just mentioned, was that the final straw that gave you the courage to leave, made it possible for you to leave?
It gave me the determination to give up trying to fix the relationship. It made me believe and accept finally that this was never going to change, that it was, no matter what he said or did, it was going to continue. And, you know, it had not been very long before I had assembled a walker for my mother. And the realization that in 30 years, if I was lucky, my sons would do this for me. And I didn't want to waste the next 30 years of my life, the last 30 years, doing what I had done for the past 30 years.
So what took you from realizing that the relationship was never going to change to being able to leave?
He was gone on a business trip. I spent a week going through family albums, going through the tears and the fears and deciding, you know, I ended up in such an emotional state. I realized if I didn't leave, I wasn't going to be okay. So it was a decision. I'm going to survive this, and I'm going to salvage myself. And so the title of the book, Leaving You for Me, that's what I did. Right. I did it to save myself because I couldn't survive it anymore.
Right.
Not emotionally.
No. I know. I understand where you're coming from there. How did your husband react to your decision when you told him?
Well, we were on the patio. He came home from the business trip. I poured us each a glass of wine, and by this time I had done what I refer to as numbing out. You do. You reach a point that you just numb out. And I just told him I had made a decision that I was leaving him. And so he kicked his patio chair when sailing. I watched his phone glub into the bottom of the pool and flash and go black. His wine glass went over the negative edge pool into the preserve, and he was yelling at me that this is what he got for working his off all of these years and all of this time, and he comes home to this, and I wasn't grateful for anything he did for me, and I was selfish, and I just got up and walked away, got in my car and left.
Where did you go?
I went to a hotel, not far away, and one I knew he had visited with girlfriends. It seemed I was defiant at this point in time. And I went and checked in, and I slept like a baby.
Right.
And then it started. It hits later. Numb does go away.
Right. So then my next question was, you know, when you had left or decided to leave, then how confident were you that you were going to be okay? What was your biggest fear about being on your own outside the marriage?
I think some of what we talked about, the chemical dependencies that can happen from over 40 years in this relationship, the lack of logic. I logically knew better, and yet I used to sit in bed at night when I was sad and terrified, and I played two songs, Rachel Platten's fight song, this is my fight song, Take Back My Life song,
mm-hmm.
and then there was another one, it was a country western song by Shelley Wright, and it was called Shut Up and Drive, Don't Look in the Mirror, Turn the Radio On, Get Out of Here, and all the words to that, those two songs just were what I needed to hear at the time. And so it got me through those. I didn't ever intend to go back, but it's still hard to actually cut that rope and take the fall.
Right, right. So what was your biggest fear about leaving?
I had upended my whole family. I had hidden what went on. We on the surface were the perfect couple. No one understood. I was getting battered by family going, what in the world are you doing? By, you know, a friend who says, well, you know, he always treats me with respect and it takes two, you know, and I didn't know if she thought that I should, you know, normalize to being a threesome with he and his girlfriend or what. It's like you've upset their world. It's going to change a dynamic. My ex was kind of the center of this social group, and I was going to mess it up. And so it's standing up not just to him, to most of the people you care about. And how was my life going to change, and was I going to be able to handle it?
And how did your social circle respond to you?
Well, it rarely works because the dynamics in our type of relationship, my friends weren't welcome. In fact, somebody dropped by one day and there were tools that were thrown, and I was told never to allow that to happen again. And so my friends became the wives of his friends. And, you know, they are really in a vulnerable position because they don't want to take sides. But at that point in the first of the break, if they don't support you, then they're almost opposition. You can't. There was one, my closest friend, that I talked to and then found out that she would go home and tell her husband everything I said, which he was my ex's best friend. So
did that mean you were feeling pretty isolated after you'd left?
I was, and I don't know if the stars aligned. I don't know what happened, but I met Joe, and she and I became fast friends, and she's still the dearest friend I've ever had in my life. And you do, and it was because I wasn't going to just sit in the house and mope and cry. I Googled, you know, events and things to do in Flagstaff, and I made a choice to get out and get myself out of the house, and so my new life began.
So you pushed yourself. Well done.
I had to.
Yes.
It's a decision. You've got to decide to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And when you realize you're walking around, you know, with a box of tissue in one hand and at a point the dog, I had my bull mastiff with me, and bless his heart, you know, I mean, I'd cry, put my face in my hands and cry, and he'd come and put his nose between my hands and my face, and it's like, you know, it's a good thing we were both washable. And you realize that if this is the rest of your life, it isn't worth it. And you can get to the point where you have to decide whether it is or not.
Right.
And when you decide, my decision, and I put it out there in the book, there was a point in time where you wonder if it is worth it. And I just knew... my mom couldn't handle it if something happened to me. And so it's like, okay, I can be strong for somebody else long enough to be strong for myself.
Lovely. So let me ask you this, Alex. Did you have any regrets for staying so long? Do you ever wish that you had the strength to leave sooner?
It's just been within the last 6 months that I finally cut the cords with those regrets. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I hope that my book will, one, point out some of the dynamics of these relationships, because I didn't know until a counselor put a name to it that it was an emotionally abusive relationship. You become conditioned to it. And I hope someone else will see and save themselves the decades that I wasted.
So how did you overcome your regrets?
It's all part of the letting go process. You can stay mired in regretting you didn't leave and wishing it had been different. And those are all the reasons you stayed. And you got to realize at a point that you have to stop. And if you're going to have a new life, you have to, well, you know what happened just the other day, because now I live a state away. I moved here by myself, and I felt like I was a refugee from my old life. And it just has finally settled in that I'm not. This is my life, and I like it. And I wouldn't go back for love or money. And it's a process. It's a process of letting go. And that's one of the things you have to let go of, is the regret, because you can't change it.
Right. Right. And you have to tell yourself that you made the best decisions you could at the time. You had good reasons for staying.
Well, that, and now, too, the good things in my life and my kids and the... a lot of the great travels and things in my life are coming, bubbling back up to the surface. You know, the tragedy of the things that were wrong with the relationship were like neon lights for so long, and now those are receding into the background, and I can embrace the good things in my life and look forward to going forward and feel free of it.
So you have adult children.
I do.
Do you have any contact with your ex now?
No, not really. We have, he sent me Mother's Day flowers, and I sent him a thank you for the card and the flowers. But it's best we don't communicate for me. This
right.
is one of the things I learned is essential for healing is to go what they call no contact. And it's because as you try and heal, if you continue to do it, it just keeps you tethered to that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, we don't. And then at the request of my kids, they saw a few of the tempers. They, through the process, they saw things that and became aware of dynamics in the relationship. And they didn't like to see that. And they said, okay, you guys, this is what we need you to do.
Oh. Well, that was very insightful of them.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was. They're great, great guys. Great
so,
men.
Alex, we're almost up on time here. I have one more question for you. And that's, what advice would you give someone who's struggling with the decision to end their marriage?
To educate themselves, either start Googling simple things like lonely in marriage, or my husband says this, or I feel that. And you're going to find legions of people out there looking for answers like you are, and realize that you are not alone, because you think it's just you or something's wrong with you. And you're going to find that there aren't, and or that you aren't, and that you need to realize and believe that you're stronger than you think you are, and you don't know it until you have to be. And that you really don't know how strong you are until you have to be, and that you're worth fighting for. That every second that passes isn't just a second of their life, it's a second of your life, and you can't
right.
get it back.
Right.
And so there are a lot of things that bring the realization that you matter enough to stand up, and that you can change and redefine your life, whatever your age. I had a Medicare card in my pocket when I finally left, and I've got an awesome life, and I'm having the time of my life.
Great.
So,
well, that's really good to hear, Alex. And I so appreciate you sharing your story and being so honest about all of the events in your life. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Mandy.
Listeners, my guest today is Alex Dillon. And Alex is the author of Leaving You for Me. It's available on Amazon. It's a story about how she left her marriage of 47 years and, as she says, had a Medicare card in her pocket. I know this is not an easy decision, and oftentimes you can drive yourself round and round in circles trying to make it. I'd encourage you to try to identify all your reasons for wanting to leave and all the reasons why you think you can't. And then you can start working through those one by one to see how much of what you think is really true and how much of it is fear and other people's expectations. I do have a free course on my website, Since My Divorce. The course is Divorce the Answer? That's another great resource for you. A word of caution here, if you are in an abusive situation, whether that's physical, emotional, or financial, we know that leaving increases the risk of abuse significantly. This is a situation that needs to be carefully planned and prepared. Do check for your local domestic abuse organization for help. They have resources and they will be able to help you prepare for this. I want to thank you for listening today. There'll be a synopsis of this conversation posted to my blog, sincemydivorce.com. And you can follow me at Since My Divorce on Twitter and on Facebook. And I hope you'll join us again next time for more conversations about divorce.